Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Secure Your Life, Real Talk about Real Life. This show will give you the honest, no-holds-barred advice on how to take control of your financial future. Securing your life means securing your future. And I am your host, Diamond Taylor. We have a great show for you tonight. Hopefully, we'll be able to get our special guest in. His name is Robert Smith. He is a self-made entrepreneur, and he has some great stuff he would like to share with us. He's opened up two separate companies with his various techniques on advertising and marketing, but along the way, he's had some stumbling blocks, you know, especially being an entrepreneur, trying to build your business does create some type of financial pull on your personal as well as your business credit. So he's going to talk to us about how to fix what is broken. But I would like to start off the show letting you know about some of our topics. We're going to be talking about credit development, management, and repair for your personal and business finances. So our first topic will be about credit development. I'm going to recap on what we talked about last week. Last week, we dealt with understanding credit and dealing with debt, understanding your credit report, why it is important to know what's on it and how to fix errors, and five common habits that cost you dearly. We had such a great show that I thought that it was very important for us to recap first before we go forward. To me, this is a topic that people like to keep hush-hush. You know, it's kind of a personal thing, especially when you're going through some financial difficulties. But with the economy being as it is today, a lot of us have found ourselves relying heavily on our credit. Due to job loss or illness or for whatever reason, the country as a whole has been relying heavily on its credit line. Sometimes when we have a financial situation and we end up abusing our credit and not having anything saved for a rainy day. So we would like to really focus this show on those people who, the first part of the show is going to be on how to develop credit. And for those of us who have already done that, developed it, and we mismanaged it and need it fixed, we're going to focus on that part of the show towards the latter part of the hour. But I'd like to talk to those of us who are looking to establish credit for the first time. So those are the people who are, you know, between like teenage all the way to young adult, when we first get our first taste of somewhat of a financial future. When we are young and we get our first job, we really are not thinking about what we need to do in order to create a good credit portfolio for ourselves. How to develop the strategies to know when you're actually ready for credit. I know when I was going to college, at registration, I did all of the paperwork for that, and then we got our book list, and then we had to go to the bookstore. But along inside of the bookstore, when I got my books, there were credit applications for credit cards that they stuffed into the bag along with our books. So I think a lot of us ended up starting off very badly when it comes to getting credit. No job, you're only depending on your financial aid or your student loan, and what if you borrowed over the amount that was allotted actually for your classes, then you had a little bit more left over. And I don't think that the majority of us actually was wise with that money. So then we were introduced to the world of plastic, and plastic is not actual money. But when you're young and you don't really understand the responsibility that comes with creating a credit profile for yourself, you think that I have a credit line, they've given me, so I have free rein, and then you don't realize that when the bill comes, that money has to be paid. So then you get in the habit of only paying the minimum amount, which is a very bad idea. So even before you even think about going and joining into what I consider to be plastic land, you really need to have a plan in place for your financial future. Where is it that you would like to see yourself in the next year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years? And I know for young people that is really, really hard to think about, especially when you're new, away from your parents. This is the first time you're in college. You have maybe a part-time job, or even you might be working on campus for work study, and you're getting a little bit of money from that. So you tend to not think of your future financially, and you start to live off of plastic. Really not a great idea. The credit card should only be used in case of an emergency. When you're that age and you do not have a financial plan. So we're going to talk about putting together a financial plan for you. The first thing that you need to do is understand the rules when it comes to credit. Testing your credit worthiness and having a plan in place. So what happens when you decide that you would like to start a job, put money away? First thing you need to do, if you haven't done this already, is get a bank account. It is imperative that you acquire a checking and savings account. And when you get your money, you need to be in the habit and have the idea that whatever money I get write down what your expenses are, and then put money aside for your savings, because it is important to pay yourself. You are your greatest asset, so you need to start treating yourself as an asset. Because you don't want to live off plastic and become your own worst liability. So first and foremost, we need to open up a bank account. I suggest that you actually go into the bank and get a personal banker. And let this person be like your best friend. Because they will explain to you the various financial products that they offer that would benefit you in the long run. So you want this to be a long-lasting relationship because your savings account might end up being the first cornerstone, or should I say stepping stone, to actually building your financial portfolio, which we'll go into that later on in our series about how to develop future money or retirement money and putting that aside for yourself, like deferred comp and everything else like that, Roth IRAs. So we'll talk about that a little later. But what we need to start dealing with is actually securing and developing a plan of action as far as your money and your credit. After you've established your bank account, your savings account, and your checking account, you're going to need your checking account for many reasons because really it is really not safe to carry cash. So once you get your paycheck, you can actually have it if your employer is enrolled or has direct deposit. Your money can be directly deposited into your bank account. And you can actually have it with your personal banker where part of your paycheck goes directly into savings, where you need a portion of that definitely to go towards your savings. And let that build and do not touch. That's your rainy day money. Do not touch under any circumstances. Never touch your savings unless it is an extreme emergency. And an extreme emergency is not the fact that this is the last day for a sale on a 72-inch flat plasma screen television. That is not an emergency. So you have to define for yourself a plan that I'm not going to touch this savings money because I need that. And then the rest of the money, it goes in your checking account to pay off your expenses. So you make sure that you always cover your bills. You need to make sure that you don't overextend yourself. In other words, do not sit out money or write checks or use your ATM card or your debit card when you don't have the amount to cover your expenditures. That's a very bad idea. We want to start developing good financial habits. And in order to do that, we must start off right and stay right. So that's what we're going to talk about, the management part of it. But how to acquire credit? You need to first figure out and look at the fine print on those credit card applications. That is very, very important. And as I spoke about last week, we talked about the credit bureaus. What exactly are they and how do they work? The credit bureaus are it's three major credit bureaus that happens in the United States, and there are several that are used all over the world. But the ones that are used primarily in the United States is TransUnion, Expedient, TransUnion, Expedient, and then you also have, you also have several others, and we will go into detail, but they actually go through and they really, really look at how you're spending your money. So you have Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian. Those are the three major ones in the United States. So they collect, or they take it's like a history of everything that you purchase on credit. So whether or not you are being very wise with your credit, and if you're not being wise with your credit, they report that faster than they report your negative credit. So you need to make sure that you pay your bills on time and you pay more than the minimum amount when you are establishing, managing, and developing your credit. So the next thing that you want to do after you read all of the fine print on the application, before you even fill out anything, you need to make sure that you have a clean credit report. Because you'll be surprised that even though you've never, ever filled out a credit application, you may have never used your Social Security number to acquire anything, you indeed could have been a victim of identity theft. So you want to first write to all three credit bureaus and get your free credit report. And you can do this online by contacting the Trade Commission, and they will actually give you a free credit report. I'm pretty sure you've seen on television and on the radio about freecreditreport.com. There are other people who advertise that you can acquire a free credit report. You can actually write to the bureaus directly and get a free credit report, and you are due one every year for free. Now, if you want to pull it more than that, of course, you will have to pay a fee for that, but it is more than worth your while, because you'll be surprised at the fact that someone else could have used your Social Security number to acquire credit in your name, and you could have damaged credit. And that would be very bad, and that's something that you need to fix before you even attempt to start getting or developing and even managing your credit. I'm going to take a short break, and when I come back, I'm going to check and see if our guest is on the line. And you're listening to Secure Your Life, Real Talk About Real Life. The show will give you no-holds-barred advice on how to take control of your financial future so that you can secure your future when money matters. We'll be right back. Back, and I want to invite you to call in. Our call-in number is 347-884-9343. Again, that is 347-884-9343. And I think our guest might be on the line. You're listening to Secure Your Life, Real Talk about real life and how to secure your financial future. And caller 815, you are on the air. Hello?
Hello, this is Robert.
Hi, Robert. Thank you for calling in.
Yeah, I was, I've been on since 10, so I don't know if I was pushing the right button or not.
Okay. Well, I'm going to, should I let you introduce yourself, or should you go ahead and take the rings and tell us about you? You tell me how you want to do this.
Okay. I guess this is a different situation. Most hosts don't know me as well as you. So,
okay.
You know, it's kind of a little different. I mean, you can do it, or I can kind of pick off, because I've actually listened to the entire show. So,
okay. Well, actually, you know what? You can go ahead and take the reins. You have a whole lot to offer. I will say this much, that this man is a phenomenal young man. I have known him for a very long time. When we first met, it's a funny little story. I was trying to start my business, and I think he was starting his all at the same time. We met at the library, and I had like a mountain full of business books.
Right.
On how to start your business, find money for your business. You name it, I was trying to do it back, oh, wow, what is it, 15 years now?
Yeah,
or even more than that?
Yes, it's been a while.
It's been a while, right. So you can jump right in. I'm just amazed at from the time that when I first met you and how your business has grown leaps and bounds. Even with the economy, you've been able to reestablish some things and look at you now.
Yeah, and well, thank you for that. And just to echo the story, I remember that story too. I worked at the, I guess it was, for lack of a better word, the checkout at the library where you checked your books out. And I remember you having a stack of books. And like you said, I was running a business from my home, and I read just about every business book that came out. That's one of the benefits of working at the library. And then so we kind of chatted, and I was like, yeah, I'm doing such and such. And then you told me about what you're trying to do. And one of the things I learned early on was to study marketing. Whatever business you're in, the real business you're in, which most people don't know, excuse me, is you're in a marketing business. You may sell travel, you may sell Avon, you may market an art store or restaurant, but you're in a marketing business. You just market something different. So that's a whole different mindset to have when you understand your job as a business is to get a customer or a client and to take care of them. You know, most people have a one-track mind, and they say, okay, well, this is the business I'm in. When in actuality, they're in a marketing business. They just sell a certain type of business, product or service. So I knew that early on, kept doing it every day, and just like anything else you do in life, the more you do it, the better you get at it. So that's my story, and, you know, fast forward 10 years, you know, for me working in my kitchen table and spare bedroom and all that good stuff, to 18 people to work for me, you know, so I'm living proof that you can start at the bottom, but you don't have to stay at the bottom. You do have to educate yourself. You do have to have faith. And I know this part of this is dealing with your credit, and I heard you talk about earlier when you were mentioning I was going to be on. I had to work through that. And I love your story about being in college because they got me. I'll tell you what tripped me up, a bag of M&Ms.
Oh, you too.
I went to college in Indiana, and I went home one weekend with a buddy of mine who was from South Bend, and we go to the mall, and they have this table there, and it's, you know, they said sign up for this credit card, and you'll get a free bag of M&Ms. At least it was a jumbo bag. I didn't fall for the little small bag. At least it was the big bag of M&Ms. And that was my first introduction into the credit game. Of course, I was approved. I was a freshman in college, no job, no income, no work history, but somehow I got approved. And, you know, not having any financial education, like you talked about earlier, got behind, charged everything, didn't understand the difference between cash and plastic is not real money.
Right.
You know, so, and then what you do is you, if your parents don't bail you out, then you got to pay for that. And if you're behind, if you're late, just like you said, you guys listen to her. It's going to go on your report, credit report negatively as a late payment, and which I didn't know. I still didn't know and understand credit. So what I did to get out of it is I just started paying on time, started paying off certain credit cards, department store cards, gas cards. Then you work your way to the major credit cards. But that's how I started. I just kind of got the little small ones out of the way. And then you'll see over time, the only thing that's going to correct this is time. There's no magic bullet, regardless of what
exactly.
You see on television. There's no magic bullet. It took you years to beat your credit up. It's going to take time for you to straighten it up. That's life. So once you understand that going in, that takes the desperation and the pressure off. So you want to limit the amount of credit you have. You want to pay off what you do have. And just give it time. If you do that and you watch and budget and manage what you're doing, you can rebuild it.
Let me ask you this. When you first started thinking about the jumbo bag of M&Ms and getting that credit application, did you or did you not have a bank account of any kind?
Yeah, I had my mother and I set up a joint bank account when I graduated high school. So I do remember that. It was an account with my mother. So even when I went off to college, I still had that. I mean, you know, her name was on it. But we did have that. I did have that. You know, wasn't much money in it, but I had the account.
Okay. So you at least had a safeguard in the respect of you knew that it was important to have a bank account.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just, to this day, I'm amazed at people who function, and I know you can do it. I mean, immigrants, whether they're illegal or legal, do it all the time. Personally, I don't know how you can do it, but it can be done. Somehow people manage to function without having one, but it's so much easier if you do have one. And banks are hurting so much now. It's, you know, there's free checking. There's all different kinds of checking. You can get which one ever fits you. You know, you don't have to have the one with all the bells and whistles, and, you know, you just need one. It's easier to keep track. So I would recommend that the people who listen who don't have one, that they do get one.
Okay. I'm going to chime in another caller who's also from the 815, and I think that he wants to talk to our audience briefly about how to develop and establish credit. And then I'm going to jump right back into you, Robert, and I want you to tell the people a little bit about how you started from, like you said, from your college days to where you are now, and even about your business and how to establish credit for your business, and how, you know, even though you might mess up your business credit, there's still life after that, and you can reestablish that even, and how to rebuild your business as well as your personal finances. I'm going to let the other 815 caller come in. I'm going to invite other callers to come. And if it's okay with you, Robert, at about 10:35 or 10:40, I would like for you to chime back in real quick on, tell us about the rest of that, and then tell us about your business and what's coming up next and how people who have businesses, or even if they have an idea of something that they would like to do, how they can benefit from your service. As
sure.
Well as how to create and establish, develop, and even repair whatever's going on and still push their business at the same time. So I'm going to let the other caller come in. If you'd like to call in on our show, the phone number is area code 347-884-9343. Again, that is area code 347-884-9343, and you're listening to You Say It Like It. I'm sorry, Secure Your Life, Real Talk About Real Life, How to Secure Your Financial Future. And you are on the air, caller. Hello.
Hello, Diamond.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, this is Ron. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Ron.
Okay.
I know you said last week that you wanted to tell the young people, and anybody that's trying to develop credit, what's the best, what's your best advice and what worked for you as far as development and management of credit?
Okay. Well, here's the thing. What I did, how I started, and I don't think this has changed over the years. The first thing I did was there was a small clothing store in a loop, and I think it was Smokey Joe's. I think that was the name of the store. I opened a charge account with them, and I bought something. Anyway, before I made the purchase, I figured out how many payments I could afford to make. And how much I could afford to pay, and how long it would take me to pay for it. And so I made the purchase. I don't remember what I bought, but it really wasn't all that expensive. But I paid until I got it paid all. I paid it until it was all paid off. And then after that, I purchased something else.
Okay.
And I just went from that. I started there, and then I went to other shops, and I got credit with them. And at the time, I had a checking and a savings account. And I remember, I've forgotten the fellow's name that was on before.
Okay, his name is Robert. He's still here with us.
His name is Robert, okay. I remember, I think the first credit card or information we received about the credit, my wife and I were together at the time, and I think this was in, 72, I think it was 71 or 72, somewhere around in there. And anyway, we got a letter from my bank offering the credit card.
Okay.
And, I wasn't interested in it. My wife was. And she's insisting that we should get it. And so she didn't bother reading the fine print. She just wanted the card.
Okay.
Because you could just take it out and use it in place of cash. So
right. How important is reading the fine print?
Oh, hey, that's what happens when I read the fine print. I found out that, okay, at the time, we had charge accounts with Sears, Carson's, Ward's, and Fields. We had charge accounts with them.
Okay.
But they charge interest quarterly. Okay, I read this thing. They charge, if you owe them money, they compound the interest daily.
Oh, wow.
I don't remember
So what happens when the credit card company charges you daily?
Okay. Whatever you end up by owing, the percentage just goes up and up and up and up and up. You end up paying not on what you owe, but on the interest. You end up by just paying your interest. You never really get, I think it's how people end up by getting in trouble. They end up by paying on the interest and not really paying on the principal. So the bill never really goes away. So it gets just bigger and bigger and bigger, and it just balloons until, hey, you just have no control over it, and it's all over for you. See, so anyway, when I explained it to her, I said, hey, look, we can get this, but I'll tell you right now, if you abuse this, the cards are going in the garbage. When the bill comes, you have to pay it. Okay. The first bill she got, I think it was 200 and some change. And the first thing she says, oh, my goodness, look how much this is. And she says, well, I can pay a little bit here. I says, hey, what did I tell you? It's all or nothing. She cried like a baby, but she went on and paid it. But, I mean, I think that taught her a lesson.
Right, and that's a good thing. I think that more people need to, like you said, look at the fine print, find out exactly how much interest and when the interest comes into play, and stay away from those teaser rates. You know, where they say it starts off with 0% and then all of a sudden it blooms up to 25%.
Yeah, well, understanding I have of it, they're playing even crazier games with the interest now. Now, to tell the truth, I really don't even bother reading what the interest is on my credit card bills, because what I do, when the bills come in, I pay them. Well, I don't pay them right away. And this says something else. People might, your listeners might want to take advantage of. You'll notice that whenever you get the bill, it's almost 30 days before it's due.
Correct.
Okay. Huh?
That is correct.
Okay, now, if you pay that bill right away, your creditors have your money in their bank growing interest for them. Now, I do realize the banks do not give a lot of interest. I mean, they don't pay a lot of interest, but it's something. And why should you let them get it when you can keep it in your own account? So I pay the bill in about 5 to 7 days before it's due. I drop it in the box.
Okay.
So that way, hey, it's not that much, but hey, you'd be amazed at when those $1 or $2, how they will accumulate and turn into something.
Okay.
I've never really added it up, but I'm quite certain I have, over the years, I have saved the bundle.
Okay, so you're saying that timing is everything. So if your bill is due, 28 days from your purchase, and it also, from what I notice, is when you buy is important.
Oh, yes, that makes a difference also.
Right, so you need to look at that too. If you know that your statement drops on a certain day, and you need to make sure that you're taking advantage of the full billing cycle so that it works towards your advantage and not the creditor's advantage. So you need to make sure that you have at least that full 30 days before your current charge of whatever your purchase is hits that bill, because that way you win and they lose. And make sure that you pay out your credit cards on time. And if you did make a big purchase, you need to make sure that you at least pay off at least 3/4 of it.
Well, I would suggest anybody to do, if you're going to make a purchase for something that you're going to end up, it's going to be a big bill, forget the credit card. Let's say you're buying, like a refrigerator or a range or something for your home. Don't use your credit card. Get an account at Sears or someplace.
Okay, so you suggest store cards because they charge, their interest rate is lower.
Right. They have a lower interest. And that way when you'll save a lot there.
You'll save a lot there.
And this also will have to help in establishing your credit. Because the main thing I always do is this. Anything that I purchase, that I use my card.
Yes.
I could write them a check. Or I could go to the bank and get it.
That you have money in the bank to cover whatever your purchase is going to be, and you just use your card instead so that your money in the bank can gain interest for you.
Right.
It's still
sitting up there.
Well, I need to get back to Robert. I want you to still stay tuned in.
Okay.
And Robert is going to tell us his anecdote on how he established himself, how he got his business together, and his triumphs as well as his trials and where he is today. And then I'm going to take some more calls. So, Robert, we're right back at you. Everybody else is on the phone or in the chat room. Please continue to hold. I will get to you. So go ahead, Robert. You're on the air. Robert? Did we lose Robert?
No, I'm here.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, we're back with you.
Okay. Yeah, I was saying one of the things I learned to do, and I'm self-taught. I just read a lot and I talk to people and figured out how to build business credit myself.
Okay.
And what I did was the easiest way was I just applied for an employer identification number. All that is just a number that you get when you start a business if you plan on hiring an employee. And the secret to that is you can be your own employee. You don't have to physically or actually hire somebody else. If you incorporate your company, you can be your first employee. That's totally legal. So
okay.
That takes the place of your Social Security number. See, this is how you establish business credit, which is separate from your personal credit. That's the quickest way, is just get your own what's called an EIN number, and you can Google that, and you'll go to the site, and it's free. There's some places that will charge you $10 for it, but you can find it through the government agency. And
right, the IRS, you can get your
EIN. Yeah, and you don't have to pay for it. So that becomes, you use that instead of your Social Security number. Then what I did was I went to Sam's Club, I went to Office Depot, went to Office Max, you know, set up an account with UPS. You find stores that offer credit, and it'll be small. It might be a $500 limit or a $1,000 limit. But you do that, and then you pay and you build your business credit. Then eventually I had a $20,000 line of credit from Wells Fargo. Then I got a $50,000 line of credit from the bank, and that all started with one $500 store credit in my business name. And they, similar to your personal credit, they just want to see that you have a track record of paying the money back and that you are a good credit risk, because that's what it boils down to, is how much of a risk are you, you know, what are the chances the banks are going to get their money. And so that's how you establish business credit. And I never put up any collateral, never had to put up my home, never had to put up my car, never had to put up anything. So that's how you set up business credit separate from your personal credit. At least that's how I did it.
Okay.
And, you know, another way thing you can do is you can go through Dun & Bradstreet, which is a very important business resource. You know, but starting out, if you're starting out, you're not going to have a Dun & Bradstreet number. That's for companies that have been around a while and have some type of track record. But you can register with them and get on file, and that can follow you, and that definitely helps with your business credit, because when financial institutions are running a check on your business and they see that you're in good standing with Dun & Bradstreet, that's weighted. That definitely helps your business credit.
So Dun & Bradstreet is like the credit bureaus would be for your personal account. This is the people that track you for your business.
For the
is that
business,
correct?
And yeah, exactly. And they're well respected. They are, and when you have a good rating with them, you can have a personal, I think, so and so, you know, type credit, but then have a strong rating, you know, A+ rating with Dun & Bradstreet, and those ratings are just like you have an 800. Credit score or your personal. It's just that weighted, but it's for business.
Okay.
So the challenge is you may have to be patient. You may have to deal with the UPS account, the Office Depot, and the type of office supply stores and, you know, printing companies, you know, for a few months because you're establishing the credit.
Okay.
You know, because I know more people are going to want to jump in and say, well, I don't want an account with FedEx and UPS. I want to get to the money where I can, you know, give me $15,000. Well, you got to work your way up to that. So
you have to crawl before you walk.
Right. You got to qualify for it. Because if you try to buck the system and go around this way, you're most likely to be not approved, because you haven't built up the credit history. So that's what that is. It's just establishing your business credit. Like I say, that once you can get the employment identification number in a matter of minutes, so that doesn't take long at all to get. And then as soon as you get that, then you can start applying for credit.
Oh, okay. So basically, on your personal credit, you have to establish your bank account, savings and checking, and be wise to look at the fine print on all the credit card applications, and when you get it, don't abuse it. Pay off your credit on time. Now, on your business end, you incorporate yourself, and then you do the same thing. Make sure that you get your bank account for your business, get your EIN number, and then go to the office supply stores and get an account with them. Is that correct?
Right.
And, like, Office Depot and Sam's Club and just stores like that and try to establish yourself a little bit at a time, just like you would do in your personal, you need
exactly.
to do the same thing for your business.
The difference is once you are established as a business, then they add more zeros to it as you grow and as you want more credit. So as you start off with the Sam's or the all the other business clubs and office supply stores and you start off with that. You want a good track record, I would say minimum 6 months where you're using the car, you're paying it off. That's given time for your business credit to be built and done at Bradstreet to follow that and build your rating. Then you can go to another place, maybe a bank or maybe a finance company, and say I'd like 10, 15, 20, or like I said earlier, I got a $50,000 line of credit. But
okay.
that would have happened had I not had the little small credit that they showed, hey, he paid his bills on time.
Well, someone in the chat room asked about the SBA, the small business loans. Is that a way or is that something that someone should be thinking about? And do you know anything about the qualifications for that?
Yeah, it's a lot tougher now. Obviously, it was easier 3 or 4 years ago even to get an SBA loan. Now the qualifications, they're tougher. It's tougher to qualify. They're making more people put up collateral. Used to be you could get it. It would be unsecured. You didn't have to put much up. But now they want people to maybe use your home equity to back up the loan they give you. And now with the real estate dropping, people don't have the equity they used to have, so they're not getting it that way. It's there, the SBA, but it's a lot tougher now even to get money through that program than it used to be. And that's just a sign of the times because that's still connected to a bank.
Right. I was about to say, that sounds like trying to actually go to your bank and get a loan. So the SBA is now competing for the same type of – they're looking for the same type of credit worthiness like the banks are looking for.
They're looking for – and my thing, too, is one of the things I learned, and this is one of the benefits of starting off being broke, is you figure out ways to get done what needs to be done. And there's a way you can grow a business without borrowing any money. If people are thinking, okay, well, I need to borrow $10,000, $50,000, I need $100,000, in actuality, you don't. All you have to do is real simple. Whatever business you're in, you just figure out what do people need to buy, where do they need to go before they do business with you. What else do they need to purchase while they're doing business with you? And then after you sell them or provide the service or product, where do they go after you? So in my case, because I had a marketing firm, I answered these three questions, and this is what shot me to six figures and seven figures, and I still use it to this day. As a marketing company, I said, okay, anybody who needs marketing, what do they need to do first? Well, duh, they got to have a business. They got to open a business. Okay, well, where do they go to do that? They either got to go to their local county if they're not incorporated. So whether it's Cook County or DuPage, whatever county you live in, Winnebago, wherever state, there's a local county where you have to register your business, or you go through the state and incorporate the business. So what I did was I went through the local county and set something up with them where I got the names of people, everybody who started a business. And in my area, about 50 to 60 new businesses were started each month. So I got the names of those people. So I figured out, okay, what do people need to do before they work with me? They got to start a business. Then I figured out, okay, well, while they're working with me, if I'm doing marketing or PR for them, what else are they going to probably be looking for? They're probably going to want to print some flyers. They're going to probably want to have a sign or a billboard. All right. So I went to people who sold those type of products and services, and they sent me customers. So I just repeat this process for every business I've ever owned, is you set up deals with other companies who sell to your similar, you know, a similar customer base, and have them send you the referrals.
Okay.
So what happens is instead of me having to borrow $10,000 to get my business off the ground and promote it and advertise it and get a location and do all this other stuff people think they need to do, I had people coming in my door that didn't cost me a dime.
Wow. That's amazing. Now, we have people in the chat room, and we have other callers on the line that probably would like to ask you questions or would like to chime in onto the conversation, but I'm going to let everybody know you're listening to Secure Your Life, Real Talk about your finances and how to secure your financial future when money matters. And our call-in number is 347-884-9343, and we're talking to our special guest, Robert Smith. And before I let the other calls come in and I answer the chat room, the person in the chat room, they wanted to know about the American Express Small Business Credit Card. Did you know any information about that, or did you acquire that yourself? And if so, do you think that that is a good way to establish business credit?
I would say in our psyche, American Express definitely has a certain appeal to it. I can't give you the specifics as far as the interest rates or the some of the particulars. I got a pre-approved letter in the mail from American Express about a week ago, so I can't really tell you how they compare with a Visa or a MasterCard, but I do know in our psyche, whenever you flash that card, it's a status symbol.
Okay.
I do know they typically are a little bit more stringent. They have a little bit higher credit requirements, meaning you may not qualify for that one, but you'll qualify for Visa easily. So you just want to read the fine print, find out if it's the best deal. Don't fall into, well, this is an American Express, because, you know, there's annual fees and there's certain stuff you're paying for that status.
Right. Now, I'm going to, I want you to finish your thought. I want you to tell, before I chime in the other callers, which I'm getting ready to get to you callers in a few seconds, can you tell us a little bit more about what's going on with your business and how, if someone else out there who is trying, either thinking about starting their business or even if they have a passion to do something, because we're in an economy now that you need to be able to be diversified enough that your job might not be as secure as you think it might be, and you may need some other avenues in which to create an income stream for yourself. So I know that you have this great seminar that's getting ready to go on that people would like to know about. And as soon as you get done with that, then I'm going to let the other callers, so callers, hang in there. People in the chat room, you stay in the chat room. And those of you who are listening to us via streaming on the web, we're going to continue our show going on for the rest of it. So if you miss anything, be sure to go to the show page and get the archive of this show. Robert is going to give his information to the business and any other information shortly, and then I'm going to go ahead and get the call. So go ahead, Robert, you have the floor. Then as soon as you're done, I'm going to let the other calls come in so that they can ask you questions.
Okay, sure. I'm a big believer in just educating yourself, learning as much as you can, and there are a number of ways you can do that. You can go to school. You can take online classes. You can do the traditional way. But mentorship has really helped me. I've been blessed to work with, you know, 3 billionaires, a couple guys worth over $100 million, and so you start to think like they think and do what they do. So I'm a big fan of modeling or just being taught by people who've already achieved what it is you want to achieve. And with that, you know, I do seminars. I got one coming up Saturday in the Chicago area, and it's dealing with, you know, how do you start a business with nothing? How do you market? What's the best form of marketing? You got internet, and you got Google, and you got TV and radio, newspapers, magazines, and direct mail. You got so many things coming at you. Most people don't know the best for their business. You know, how do you clone yourself? How do you leverage? How do you not be? How do you go from just you, one person working 80, 90 hours a week, to now you have 50 people working for you, and not cost you a dime to do that? So these are strategies like that. How do you actually, and I mean literally, start with pennies and grow that into thousands of dollars with the business, or maybe an affiliate with somebody else who's established, and if you don't want to take the risk, there's a way where you can be an affiliate for someone else where You don't have to put up any of the money, any of the risk, any of the infrastructure, but you just generate customers and you get a commission for that. So there are a lot of different ways you can do that. I explain and I teach people how to do that. If they want to control the bank, so to speak, and have affiliates and people working for them, I show them how to do that and not have to borrow money, not have to go into debt, to do that. And this isn't up on my website yet, so if anybody wanted information, they can just email me. And that email is PR, P as in public, R relations, PRHotline@yahoo.com. So if you send me an email, I can send you the details about the seminar that's coming up on September 11th. You'll get all the information on what you're going to learn, how to take an idea and how to turn that into an actual business where people actually give you money to buy stuff. That sounds easy, but most people don't know how to do that. So I break it down. I show you the best ways to find partners. Just like I explained earlier, how do you go to people and get them to refer people to you when they don't know you? They never even heard of you. Why would they want to send you 15, 20 leads a week when they don't know you? There's a proper way to set that up. So I teach that to people. And like I said, I think you learn faster when you have a mentor or a coach who's working with you, who's showing you, and then who's going to help you, kind of like when you hit, you run into a challenge or you have questions, they're there to help you.
Oh, well, that's great. Could you give your email address again and your phone number where you can be reached? And then I'm going to open up the phone line so that our other people that are on the hold can actually ask you questions. And I'm also taking questions in the chat room that if you didn't get a chance to get online and on the switchboard that you can ask Robert questions. So, Robert, could you please give them your email address and your phone number and the dates for the seminar. And then I want to ask you one last question, and then I'm going to let you have the floor. Is it true that you actually took your personal credit from that credit all the way to AAA. I mean, I got email. I was very shocked at how you can go from very low on the credit toll and actually get it all the way up and rebuild your business at the same time.
I'll answer all of that. Be happy to. The phone number, my office number is 815-633-3375, and the email is PRHotline, like public relations, PRHotline@yahoo.com. So that's the best way to reach me, either one, email, phone, whichever is more convenient for you. Now, what I did with the credit, now, again, the biggest thing I want to stress is this didn't happen overnight. This took a few years when you go from, and I had everything on my credit report. I had charge-offs from companies I didn't pay. I had basically everything just short of a bankruptcy. But when I got serious about it and I wanted to buy a home for my family and I just wanted to drive better vehicles and all, the stuff we like to have, so I knew I was going to have to improve my credit. So that's what me and my wife started doing. We just made some spending changes, decided we're going to clean up our credit, and basically what that was we negotiated with the creditors who were far behind and basically settled. If I owed a company $800, I said, look, I got $300. If I hadn't paid them in 2 years, they jumped on it. They're like, $200 or $300 is better than nothing. So a lot of them we just settled. And so that closed some of those on the credit report. Then after about 3 or 4 years of everybody being paid off, we didn't open any or establish any new credit. Then what I did was I wrote to the credit bureaus, and I just asked them if they could remove the negative information. Now, by law, they can keep it on there, I think, for 7 years, but I figure I didn't have anything to lose if I just asked them to remove it. And in the letter, I just said, I know by law you can keep the late payments or the charge-offs up to 7 years, but we're looking to buy a home, and I know this will help with our credit score, and I just told them a little bit of information like that, and, they... Then I checked my credit report in 60 days, and they removed it just because I asked them.
Wow, that's great. That is amazing. So one more time, I want you to give your phone number, email address, and then I'm going to caller 847. You have been holding so patiently. So, Robert, one more time.
Phone number 815-633-3375. Email is prhotline@yahoo.com.
Okay. And 847, you're on the line. How are you? State your name.
Oh, fine. This is Eric. And just great information. I really enjoyed listening to Mr. Smith, especially about the business setup and establishing a business and credit and incorporating or going to the county. That's good information to know because I thought about this before. I've never pursued it. But now I think I can move forward a little bit. I'll contact them at prhotline@yahoo.com. I was thinking about what Ronald said about establishing credit, and I had a bad period, like Robert was saying, and I couldn't get credit anymore. So after I paid off everybody, I went to the bank and I got a secured credit card for $500. They put $500 in a savings account, an interest-bearing savings account for me, and gave me a Visa card. And I used that Visa card for 6 months for everything, buying groceries, paying my utilities, everything that I needed to do, I used a Visa card for, and I paid it off at the end of the month. And after 6 months, they issued me an unsecured Visa card, and another 6 months, my limit went up over 500, and I still had the 500 in the savings account at the bank, and I was able to move ahead with store credit cards and everything since then, but I had learned my lesson to pay off everything at the end of the month. So it did work out that way, similar to what Ronald was talking about going to the store first. I went to the bank first to get the secured card, and they have no problem with that since they already have my money. But I was interested in that credit score. How does that work? What does that mean? Is there any way that I can get my credit score free? I can get my credit reports from the credit bureaus, but what does the credit score mean, and how can I get that?
Is that a question for me?
Yes, for Robert.
Oh, yeah, you definitely want to get a copy of your credit report because that'll show what your credit score is. And you're entitled to one per year from each of the bureaus free. Then after that, if you want more than that, you'll have to pay. But your credit score is just, you know, I don't know everything they factor in, how they come up with this magic number, but I do know it's your income would, you know, match with your debt level, how much debt you have, with the income, with the timeliness of your time. So somehow they factor all that in and how long you've been doing that. That determines your credit score. But you got to start with getting the credit report just to see where you're at. And the secure credit card is an excellent idea because they report to the credit bureaus, but they don't report that it's a secure card. They just report you have open credit and you're paying on time. But you know it's secure and it's money that you already have that you're not borrowing. So that is very smart.
Okay, we have
thank you.
One other caller. I think it's a Skype call. You are on the air. Hello?
Oh, yes. Good evening. Hi, Diamond.
Good
this
evening.
Is Richard.
How are you, Richard? And I thank you for your patience and your diligence to hold on. And for all of those that are still in our switchboard, I haven't forgot about you. You will get a chance to have your questions and answered by Robert or myself. So go ahead, Richard. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine, thank you. Just a comment and a quick question. Yeah, a couple of quick questions. Number one, I think credit unions are a little bit preferable to banks, because they orient themselves more towards service than necessarily charging one. I think on the aggregate, one would end up paying less fees if they establish a credit union account versus a bank. And I think you can pretty much get everything at a credit union that one could get at a bank. But my question is, and you can comment on that if you like, it's a two-part question. Number one, what would you suggest, and this is Robert, right?
Right.
Yeah, my question is, what amount do you suggest that one should use as a barometer in terms of their net worth And what capital assets could you recommend, say a basket of them, to actually, put one's money in so that it won't depreciate?
When it comes to the amount, you have to count up the cost. You have to figure out through you doing your, being diligent and counting up the cost, how much you're going to need. And then in most cases, most of my mentors told me you need to double that because you always got unforeseen things come up. Things take longer than usual, twice as long. They cost twice as much. So if your best estimate was, okay, I need $10,000 to get this started, you probably want to try to borrow $20,000. So the first thing is there's not really one set amount. Everybody's different. If you only need $5,000 really to get going, then don't borrow $50,000. That's just more pressure and more has to be paid back. So, and then it'll be easier to get $5,000, $50,000, especially in this climate. So you just figure out what you're trying to do, how much you're going to need, try to secure that. Now, remember, it may take you a while. I know very few people now going into the bank coming out with checks. 2 years ago was easy. 3 years ago was easy. But now you're going to have to really have all your ducks in a row and everything lined up. You're going to have to show some business credit. You're going to have to show some history. And then even then it's going to take time. But you can get to the higher numbers if you're looking to borrow a little bit more.
I'm sorry. Maybe I didn't phrase it just rightly. What I was asking is what amount should one use in terms of their net worth? In other words, this is once one starts making money, how much should they be able to accumulate? You follow me?
How does one build a net worth?
No. No, I'm assuming one is working on building their net worth.
Okay.
What do you see as a reasonable figure to define one's net worth?
Okay, sure. I use the model used in the book, The Millionaire Next Door.
Okay.
And actually, that's online. If you search for Millionaire Next Door.
Are you talking about Pa and Yaw and things of that nature?
Yeah, exactly.
Prodigious accumulator of wealth and average accumulator of wealth?
Yeah, because they have you take your annual income, then you...
Times your age.
Your age, and you divide it by a certain number. There are different ways people say to calculate your net worth, but that's how I use it because that's the one that made sense to me. Some of the other calculators and people I've studied, they didn't take into account your income. They looked at how much you had in the bank saved up versus how much debt you had and subtracted those numbers, and that was your net worth. But if you made $400,000 or $500,000 a year, to me, that's a factor in your net worth.
Well, I'm sorry. That was age times income divided by 10, I believe.
Yeah, and also too, if you wanted to Google Millionaire Next Door net worth calculator or something like that, it'll take you to that page, and you can see exactly what it is that you need to figure out your net worth. That's the one I use because that's the one that made the most sense to me. Plus, it gave me the higher net worth when I did it, so of course that's the one I'm gonna go with because it looked pretty nice on paper.
Okay, I'm well familiar with that. I think I even shared that with Diamond as a reference. But, okay, well, thank you very much, and I appreciate the conversation.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Okay. Let's go with area code 815-633. You're still on the air. Are you still on the air, Ronald?
Oh, yes. I'm still here.
Okay.
Now, you were saying about figuring out your net worth. You would what would be the math on that again?
The easiest thing to do so I don't make a mistake is search online for Millionaire Next Door, which is a book. It was a bestseller book a few years ago. And in that book, they had their own way of figuring that. And
yeah, I have it if you don't mind.
Okay, no, go ahead.
Yeah, it's age times your annual salary divided by 10.
Oh. Okay. So that's all you people would have to do is what Ronald just said, and you can figure out.
Oh, that was Richard.
Oh, Richard, I'm sorry. And you can figure out what your net worth is.
Oh, it's age time your annual salary. plus
yeah,
10.
And that's just considered what they call an AAW, average accumulator of wealth.
Okay,
and if you double that, you know, but that's what one should have or at least shoot for. So that was a good book, by the way. The Millionaire Next Door.
And
right. Rich, one more time, because I think we kind of lost Ronald.
That's age and salary plus 10.
No, divided by 10.
Oh, divided by 10.
Right.
Now I get it.
You want to divide it by 10, otherwise you might be kind of disappointed.
There you go. So what happened? I'm on my way to the poorhouse. Yeah, your age plus your salary. Okay, your annual salary, is that monthly, yearly?
No, just your annual salary times your age divided by 10. And also they said you shouldn't add in any inheritances.
Okay, no, I was just saying when you said annually, was that like...
That's every year.
Oh, that would be your that's what you make for the year.
Yeah.
Correct.
What
you made from in
2009. From last year and do it from that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll have to check that.
Yeah, and that can include home equity and your retirement or your 401k. You know, you can add all that in too.
Those would be assets that go towards your net worth.
All of your investments, annuities, and whatever.
Yeah, I included my investments. I included everything.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that really helped me was the fact that I'm 36. So, you know, for someone who makes the same money that I make, if they're 20 years older than me, then that net worth won't be as high because I got age working for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, let me get this right so the listening audience can understand this. The younger you are when you start this, the better.
The better off you are. Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Just like with your retirement, the sooner you start a retirement and start tucking it away, the more you're going to have when the day retirement comes.
Okay.
That's compounded interest working for you. That's time on your side.
Yeah, that is so true. And like you were saying about the credit union. Okay,
yeah.
Now what I did was my credit union account. Originally, I was not in the credit union. And this was suggested that I close my checking account. And this was back when the credit union was giving more interest than the banks. And I was informed that what I should do is keep my savings account, get rid of the check, get rid of the savings, and put it into a credit union account and set up for payroll deductions, which I did. And it really paid off. I used to call it the Roach Motel because I would put money in, but I never took it out.
Okay.
Okay, now what I did, I just kept putting money in, and eventually I maxed the account. Now, when you max the account, since they can only insure for a certain amount. So when you get your quarterly statement, they have to send you the interest once you max the account. So after I had maxed the account, I opened another savings account. But
right.
I was not using them. And see, that's another thing that I learned how to do. Look for the deal. You need goods and services. Get those goods and services. Look for the deal. Don't just go in and just make a purchase just because you want something. Look for the deal. The deals are out there. I don't care what you're buying. The deals are out there. All you have to do is just keep your eye open and look around. And anyway, like I said, I look at a thing. I think what people should do is as far as working out their economic program, is figure out, okay, first of all, how much money do you spend from one payday to the next? Figure it out, dollars and cents. How much money do you, say, take out of your paycheck? Let's say you get paid every 2 weeks. How much money do you take for your pocket money? And does that last you the whole 2 weeks? Do you have anything left?
this will give you an indication of, say, like what you're doing with your money. And if you also, if you find a means of maintaining that, no, and you're getting those deals, you're getting more goods and services and paying less for them.
Okay.
So you'll end up with tons of stuff, and I do mean tons of stuff that you have paid next to nothing for. Believe me, I have created a video workshop for myself that this thing does some of everything. It is not yet computerized, but it's all manual, but it does work. And I can do some of everything in there. But what happens is that I created this thing out of junk, picking up used pieces of equipment from resale shops, from yard sales, garage sales. I only have one or two things in there that I bought brand new.
Okay.
Everything else
I have
is...
a question for Richard.
Yes.
Are you still there, Richard?
Oh, yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay. There was something else that you and I had talked about on previous shows that I wanted to bring up when you were discussing, I think, with on another show that I was on, about acquiring your network as far as women are concerned. Because even though this is still a financial show, and a lot of times, since now women are head of house more so and having to deal with the household expenses and, as well as carrying the family, now what would you suggest for our women listeners? How would they, I mean, I know about the rules of what you say, the millionaire next door, but from your opinion, what should women do as a whole, since now that they are able, they're head of house, having to take care of everything? And women are not, even though we are more money conscious, I don't think that we have been given the, what is the word I want to use? We haven't, you know, they tend to cater to men more in the financial industry than they do women, even though women are more, are the biggest consumers now.
Right.
We have acquired. We are able to acquire real estate, and we have made our way into the boardrooms. But I still, and even, when we buy cars, we're still not given as much of accolades, if you will, as men. So what would you suggest that women do to arm themselves as far as acquiring? And how should we build up our net worth? How should we build up our credit? How should we become more financially savvy and solvent? That question is to all of the people on the air, of course. But I wanted to bring that out to Richard first.
Yeah, that's. I can just, I guess, speak extemporaneously. I would love to take a moment to draft some information that would be unique to women. But what I could think of, if you look at the areas that women spend the most on, usually fashion, spur-of-the-moment spending, some delayed gratification is going to have to be introduced. I suggest buying previously owned cars that are still good, maybe 2 years old, that still have the warranty, as opposed to a new car. And then, and I know this is going to put a lot of people out. Now, I use a car cover, but one of the vehicles I drive is about 30 years old. It's a very worthy vehicle, but it's an older one, and I keep it covered. That preserves both the exterior and interior of your car. And so what I think that will do for one is you won't have to keep making car payments. You can keep the car long, long, long past its paid-off stage. because cars tend to cost quite a bit when you and keep up the maintenance on your car. That's another thing. Also, saving. Get a business, have some sort of business, do a service to where you get a business, and then you have greater tax deductions. As Robert Kiyosaki said, taxes represent about 50% of our expenditures. So you need to, and we work about half a year, about 6 months out of a year, just to pay taxes.
Wow,
so
that's tremendous.
Hello?
Yeah, that is huge. So half of our income for the year is going to pay our taxes.
Now, that's all taxes. That's income, and also you have to add inflation in there. So there are ways to counterbalance that. I suggest reading the books that we're talking about. Now, we said Millionaire Next Door. That's not my favorite book, even though it's a really, really good book. Think and Grow Rich, and also that's by Napoleon Hill. And there's also another author that has the book by that same title. But my favorite is Rich Dad, Poor Dad, because that's usually where you start with nothing, which is the case with a lot of, you know, people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much you can start with nothing. You start with the ideas. And then talk with people who make money. Always associate oneself with people who are good at money. Now, that requires one to relax their ego a little bit, because you have to sort of submit yourself when you do that. But, the benefits are worth it. When you talk to people who are successful, they've already done it, they've already traveled that path. But those are some of the... And I would say limit, any financial planner, I think, tells you to limit your eating out, you know, sometimes. And sometimes I make my own lunch and take it to work to cut down on expenses. So buying food is very, very expensive. So those are a few areas, I think, and what I was asking Robert earlier, it's kind of like a plane taking off where you overcome inertia and you get to a certain level and you have that money there. You've saved it. You work for it. And it's there to, as a cushion, you know, if something goes out, and it represents your net worth. And we use that little formula, which I think is a good formula. It's something to shoot for, where you multiply your age times your annual salary and divide by 10. And that's always current, by the way. That always keeps you current, or keeps one current.
Okay, well, that, wow. Okay, so if we follow those principles, and I'm going to call them principles because I think it's something that we should definitely follow through on.
Right. And just one other thing, I'll just throw this in. Now, I can normally get a discount anywhere. I can create a discount, and I don't mind doing that. I can bring a discount forward. Like if I go into a store, I can ask the manager, is there anything, if I want, whatever it is that I want, I can ask, is that item, has it been on sale or is it coming up for sale? And if it is, now sometimes you may have to buy in bulk, but you can get it at that discounted price.
Okay.
Yeah.
Look for the deal.
Yeah, and always, I mean, I love the, that's another book, The Art of the Deal. That's by Donald Trump.
Okay.
It says, every time you flush the toilet, someone makes money. So.
And that is so true.
Yeah. So anyway, those are just a few pointers, I think, just right off the top of my head.
Okay. 847, do you have any comment or question that you would like to add? Hello? Eric, are you still there?
Oh, yes. Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can all hear you.
Yeah, I was just enjoying the show, Diamond. This is really good information.
And I was laughing kind of because you asked a question. It was kind of funny to me. You asked a question about what women could do that are credit savvy and still they are disenfranchised in some cases. And I know when it comes to buying a car, I was looking at the statistics that women pay the most for the same car. They said that black women pay the most, and then there's white women, and then there's black men, and then there's white men that pay the least. And they were saying that a lot of it is because that the people that pay the least, whoever they are, male or female, do their research. They find out about the rebates that are available and the different incentives before they go to the dealer. And they said that a lot of times women really don't do that research. They see the car that they want, they already know what they want, and they just go for it. And the dealer is not going to provide them with the information to save money because they have an incentive to make more money. So that was one of the things I was thinking about when it comes to making large purchases, the difference between men and women when it comes to that.
Okay.
Go
ahead, Ronald.
Okay, now, what I wanted to say was that about females buying cars, but I think women have a tendency to get a new car because they, first of all, they don't know anything. A lot of them, they don't know anything about cars. So they're figuring that there'll be less trouble if they get a new one. So you run into a guy, he knows more about cars. As a rule, men do. They're more knowledgeable about automobiles. So they'll have a tendency to kind of look the thing over before they make a purchase. And as far as African American men are concerned, they're looking for the flash, something that's going to make them look good as they're cruising through the neighborhood. So they'll end up by buying something they really can't afford because they're out to make an impression. See, so all this turns out to be some bad news. I'll say things have changed over the years. I'll say that when I was a young man, I remember you could always tell if someone had money because when they pulled up in a big shiny car and they stepped out of it, they were dressed to the nines. Now, the person pulls up with one of these oversized SUVs with the big fancy expensive wheels and the LCD screens all over the place, and he's got the super stereo system blasting, and he steps out of the car and he looks like a ragamuffin. this is saying something.
So wait a minute. So you're saying that the person who has the their wheels or their rims on their tire actually might cost more than the vehicle themselves, or they might not even have a place to stay that is adequate, but they will spend more money on their car and its accessories than they would on their own personal selves or they don't have any kind of financial savvy as far as bank account, checking account, credit, nothing. That is true.
They'll have a situation going where their vehicle will break down, and it's sitting up for a month or two. And the thing being that you get those oversized SUVs, you can't even put them in a normal garage. They end up out on the street, and you have a lot of those cars. They're in the city. They're in areas where they don't have a garage. They're parked on the street, which means that I can just imagine what kind of insurance they're paying for those things and all that junk in there. No insurance company is going to cover that. And they have to dismantle their cars every time they come home.
Wow. Richard, what do you say to that? I'm pretty sure you see exactly what Ronald has displayed, or should I say his example of what young people, especially African-American, maybe Hispanic males also, are doing with their money. What's your take on that?
Yeah, first of all, I think it's accurate, but probably these are some young people, and I don't put them down because, you know, when they get some money, they want to, well, that is kind of wasteful. So they do that. They shouldn't do it. Speakers also, they spend a lot of money on speakers. So people who do that, they're not increasing their net worth, and that's important. That's what we're talking about here. And so that should be discouraged. There's nothing wrong with having a good transportation car. But see, guys, a lot of times they're trying to impress girls. That's the other thing. They're really trying to impress the girls, and they go about it the wrong way. Because a girl that you have to impress that way, probably it's better to let someone else impress her.
Okay, and it is actually damaging to their financial future.
It is, because the thing about it is money comes in different amounts at different times, and it comes from different sources. And if you waste money, there's many times you won't be able to recover that. Sometimes you can, of course, but and money is alive, too. Just, I think it's good for one to develop a philosophy of money. There's a passage, I think, in the scriptures that says money will depart from people who behave foolishly with it. And I don't know if you heard me. There was a money will depart from people who behave foolishly with it.
Yes.
So I think we're talking about some good principles. But what I laid down, I don't know. I know the car cover will probably, you know, tick a lot of people off. But I take a lot of pride. When you put that cover on, it really preserves the vehicle from top to bottom. Just get a really good cover. You may spend almost $100 in that range. And the other thing I was going to say with respect to buying a car, I said don't buy a new car. You don't need to do that because cars depreciate so much, and it's good to buy one that's 1 to 2 years old. You can save a lot of money that way on taxes and depreciation. The other thing, if you do buy a new car, and I like dealers. I'm not against car dealers, but go through the fleet manager. They're not as profit-driven. So if you have to buy a new one and you've done your research, as some of the people said, I think you can get a substantial discount with the fleet manager. But being able to negotiate, that's an acquired skill. And I once had a guy hang up on me, but that's okay because I knew I was getting him to the bottom line price. And so cars, you know, they have a lot of costs built in. But you negotiate well on a good car, you keep it up, and you can keep it 10, 15, 20 years. I mean, get the car you want, and then you keep it. That's the way to really profit on a car. Otherwise, you're just making someone else you're increasing someone else's net worth if you don't keep the vehicle.
And then you're depleting your own. So I guess in a way, it would be better to buy than to lease.
Well, that depends now. You know, the other thing is I think it's good to get with, if you go, I'm going to reference a book. If you get with the Think and Grow Rich, you should have a team, whether it's an attorney, an accountant, and you would have to put that to them, because if you have your business, that could be a business deduction if you choose to lease as opposed to. So, I mean, they can run the numbers and show you in short order which is the better way to go, and I highly recommend that, by the way.
Okay. I'm definitely, next week, I'm going to put all of the books that you recommended. I'm going to repeat them now. The Art of the Deal, and I believe you said that was by Donald Trump?
Right. The Art of the Deal is by Donald.
Okay. and Rich Dad, Poor Dad, who's the author of that?
That's Kiyosaki.
Okay. And Think and Grow Rich.
Napoleon Hill.
And then Robert and you suggested, even though it was not your favorite book, but you thought it was a good book, The Millionaire Next Door.
Right. That's Danko, and I forget the other guy. The only thing with that book, that's for usually for white industrialists.
Okay.
And they're in the they already have money in their family or whatever. But that's good too, and they usually own businesses. They own, you know, small businesses, maybe 15, 20 employees, up to 50 employees.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
I'm going to put this in our on the Secure Your Life show page as well as the website. So
oh, did you get the other one now? I told you, let me see, I was just looking in my collection of books. This is a good one, Black Folks' Guide to Making Big Money in America.
Okay, you said it's called Black Folks' Guide?
Yeah, he considered, that's George Sabira. He says that, and he wrote that book back in 1980, and he said it was the first financial book written for black people. So he has some decent, some good philosophy. I like him. He's a really good author.
Okay. Could you repeat that one more time?
Black Folks' Guide to Making Big Money in America.
Okay.
By George Sabira.
Big Money in America. All righty.
Yeah. And Sabira is spelled S-U-B-I-R-A.
S-U-B-I-R-A.
Right.
Well, I will make sure that that is definitely on our must-read list.
All right.
Yeah, it definitely will be on our must-read list because I think that the more we know and the more that we empower ourselves as consumers, as individuals, as business owners, for those of us who have one or even thinking about having one, especially in the economy that it is, everybody has a gift and a passion for doing something. So you.
One other thing I would recommend, excuse me, get the Cash Flow 101, and they even have one for children. That's Robert Kiyosaki, and
okay.
That teaches one how to develop their financial eye. Cash Flow 101.
Okay.
Yeah, has a nice little ring to it, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It definitely does, and they have one for children.
Yeah, it's a really good game. You can get an idea by going to his website, richdad.org. You can find it, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and just
okay.
Look up that Cash Flow 101. That's really, really, and that would be good for women to play also.
Okay. Okay, well, that is great. I mean, we had a great show. I want to thank all of my guests. I want to thank my special guest, that Robert Smith. I'm going to repeat his website and his phone number. You can reach Robert Smith and also catch his seminar if you're in the Midwest area. He will be in Schaumburg on September the 11th for his marketing $1 million seminar. For those of you who are in business or would like to start a business, have an idea of being in business, how to market yourself when you don't have a dime. And his phone number is 815-633-3375. Again, that's Robert Smith, 815-633-3375. And email address, I'm sorry, is prhotline@yahoo.com. That's prhotline at yahoo.com. So you can email him or call him about any other details that you may have, any questions. You can catch our archive show for this week and last week's show on Blog Talk Radio, Secure Your Life, and you can space that. It's actually blogtalkradio.com, secure-your-life. So Until next week, I would like to thank you all for listening. And those who are on the line and in the chat room, I want to thank you too. And I will talk with you all next week, same time, when we're talking about real talk, about real life. Secure your life and secure your financial future when money matters. Until next week, thank you.
Good night, Diamond.
Good night. Good night, Eric.
Bye.
Thank you.